Hi, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we haven't done this in a while, so I'm a little rusty. And even when I'm not rusty, I'm rusty. So let's see what happens tonight. Tim, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, Rick. I've been battling a cold the last couple of weeks, but it's not COVID, so that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I ended up getting another booster. I got a booster about a week ago with my flu shot, and I didn't get, the only reaction I got, Tim, was for about an hour and a half that afternoon, I got really groggy and I had to lie down. And so, you know, I lay down, I sort of dozed, and then I woke up and I was fine, and that was it. So the booster and plus the flu shot, you know, I think I'm all set for the winter anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, but I got to make my trip over to CVS and schedule them.
Yeah, and I was at that particular, the day I went, I got the last shot that was available, the last dosage. They had run out, and the next shipment had not come in. So people were a little upset who had made, you know, you make the online appointment, and then you go there and they don't have it. So I was lucky to get mine. So I don't know what's happened since then, but I think it's been pretty good. Tim, a lot going on in the sports world. I hope you don't mind. I don't want to dwell on the Patriots right now, but I would like to talk about Tim Wakefield. I've seen some of the tributes to Tim Wakefield. I'm stunned and saddened. Mindy, you know my daughter Mindy, has met Tim Wakefield a couple of times. And she's got some tremendous pictures with him at, they have this little platform outside of Fenway in the summertime where, what is it, Nesson, they open up the game before that.
Right.
Before they got the studio inside the ballpark. And, Mindy's got some pictures with Tim Wakefield, and she said he is just, was just the most pleasant man you could possibly imagine. Friendly, and, you know, will talk to you, and, it seems all natural. It's such a horrible loss for the, you know, the local sports community.
Yeah, you know, on top of Tim Wakefield, before we get into him, Russ Francis, the former Patriot tight end.
Yeah.
Died today.
Yeah.
Plane crash.
Russ was 70, Tim was 57, I guess, Russ Francis was flying with, an accomplished, Thunderbirds pilot who was a Thunderbird leader for about 20 years. And Francis had been flying multi-engine aircraft for a long time, so we'll have to see what happens with that one.
That was just incredible news, and he was an incredible player who we had him for a bunch of years, but then he went to San Francisco and he just continued, off that caliber level of play. But he just really stood out on the Patriots as good as he was. You know, he came from Hawaii and he had that kind of laid-back style, but boy, can he play.
Absolutely. And the thing about Tim Wakefield, go ahead, Tim, sorry.
Back to Tim Wakefield. Hold on, Rick, I got a call coming in on the other side. Just need to see. No, don't want to look at that. I turned the Red Sox game on yesterday and they were talking about Tim Wakefield, and all of a sudden I noticed they were talking about past tense. So I jumped on a Google and it said, you know, Tim Wakefield has died, and I was like shocked because it wasn't too long ago that he was sitting in the Nesson, booth after the game talking about the Red Sox, and I'm like, oh my God. And then of course it came out, Curt Schilling had opened up his big mouth and let the cat out of the bag about the severity or the illnesses that Tim Wakefield and his wife were both suffering from, and it wasn't for public consumption. And the Red Sox went out and, in a very mild way, slapped him across the face, saying it no one had permission to divulge that information without naming Schilling. You have to wonder just how bad it was and how stoic he was that he was going on TV all this time knowing he had cancer and battling this horrendous disease and never giving into it or never letting on that he was even troubled by anything. And boy, what strength of will he possessed beyond that, that innate goodness. And my friends and I on us, Fred mentioned that, you know, we were saddened by the passing. And I mentioned that, and Oliver was a great player for the Sox, but he did so much good after he was retired. Hmm. He did probably as much or more good for the community than any other former Boston athlete has ever done after his career.
I agree. There was one tribute that I read today, and I don't know if it was from a player, a coach, a manager, or who it was, but it said something to the effect, as great a player as he was, a Red Sox Hall of Famer, third winningest pitcher in history for the Red Sox, his personality outshone all of that. And I just watched a little tribute on Channel 5 tonight, and they showed, they were talking to a Dana-Farber doctor, and she said that, and this brought me to tears, she said if any of her children was at the end of life, Tim Wakefield would come in and give words of encouragement and be kind and see any one of those children at any time. And I can't imagine being able to do that at all, but he did it lovingly. And I think, you know, right. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's easy to finish your career and leave town and go on someplace else, but, you know, he's one of those that made the area his home, and he just continued to contribute in the most compassionate of fashions. And you have to think of it. He's a knuckleballer, and he's the third winningest pitcher in Red Sox history. Like 182 victories. That's absolutely astounding for a knuckleballer.
Yeah, he was great, and it's so sad, and it's just horrible for the community, and especially for his family. I just saw something. They want to. There's a movement already to change Jersey Street to Wakefield Way, and I think that would be the least that the Red Sox or the town could do. But anyway, sad day. We'll get to the Patriots at some point, maybe next week. It's just, they're not even worth talking about right now. I mean, they've taken up the airways in the newspapers and so on. Another sad story. Good news coming out of the Celtics. We'll talk to Mike Grenier later on about that, or at least it's potentially good news. We'll see what Mike has to say. Steve Krause.
We get all excited, and then they get hurt in the preseason or the first week.
And don't play at all.
You go, right back to real one.
Yeah. Steve Krause is not with us tonight. He's on a cruise with his lovely bride, so we wish Steve well. Hopefully he'll be back with us next week. I do have some local high school scores. Not a bunch. I got quite a few field hockey scores. These are final scores. Ipswich and Hamilton Wenham, 0-0, 0-0 tie. Rockport beat Greater Lowell 5-0. Newburyport over Pentucket 5-1. Same score for Linfield and Triton, 5-1 in favor of the Pioneers. Beverly and Masco, a 1-1 draw. In boys soccer, just two scores. Masconama 2, Linfield 1, Haverhill 3, and Amesbury 0. And I know, Tim, you're very close to Gloucester High School still, and both the girls, the field hockey team and the boys soccer team are doing very well.
Yes, I'm going to stop and have a word with the head coach Lauren Gold, one of my former students, and always fun talking to her, and she's done such great things with the program since she took it over, and just continuing the great tradition of Gloucester field hockey.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's got a pretty good assistant coach too, so I can never think.
Like, who do you lean on?
You know? Can never forget Don Riley. My goodness gracious. I hope to be talking with Armando Marnoto this week, too. He's the boys soccer coach for Gloucester. We're going to be talking with Danvers High School football coach Ryan Nolan in just a minute. And I want to read to you a quick thumbnail of the game on Friday night. Danvers 27, Winthrop 7. This is in the Salem News. Senior captain Owen Gazanowski, we're familiar with him, ran for 127 yards and 2 touchdowns to help Danvers make it back-to-back wins at home. Quarterback Travis Voisin, 145 yards passing, 1 yard sneak for a score, and also found Logan Matevier for a 61-yard touchdown. touchdown pass in the fourth quarter to ice the victory. And a note, Tim, I can't wait to talk to Ryan about this. As they came back for the second half, the lights went out. So I guess it took quite a while for the lights to crank back up again in that game. So I want to see what effect that might have had. But I know it's a little disconcerting when you're all ready after halftime to get back out there on the field, whether you're up by 20 or down by 20.
Yeah, that can become a worrisome thing.
It's less than ideal, as my wife would say. Okay, Coach, let me get back familiar here with the buttons I'm supposed to push, and then we'll see.
Oh, no, not again.
I know. Just be patient. You know, get a cup of coffee. Or a cup of tea. I will get back to you eventually.
Meantime.
All right. Okay, we'll be back in just a second if all goes well.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, I'm back, still trying to reconnect with Tim. The line dropped. Coach Nolan did not. I didn't connect with Coach Nolan, so hopefully he'll give us a jingle. Meanwhile, waiting for Tim to see if he can pick up. This is North Shore Sports Night, such as it is. And let's see if we can get rid of this music, y'all.
You've reached 978-578-5488.
All right, Tim will call back in, I'm sure. So again, those are all the high school scores that we have. Danvers pulling even at 2-2 in football. We will be covering, of course, a lot more games this week. We've got a lot of sports stuff up on the website right now. Hope you will check in, and take a look at what's up there. Many, many interviews, of course, and we'll have plenty more coming up. We will have Dave Woods coming up in just a little while. He's the Bishop Fenwick High School coach, and I've got that in the queue, so hopefully I recorded that this afternoon, we'll be able to connect with that. So let me try Tim one more time, and then we'll resume this thing, and I'll get Coach Woods on here, if nothing else works. So, let's see what we can do.
Here I am.
Yeah, the line dropped, and Coach Nolan did not answer, so here we are. So let's go and talk a little bit, Tim, about, if you don't mind, the future of the Red Sox. The past was pretty sad to watch. You know, there's been a lot of blame going around, a lot of speculation on what's going on, and I'm a little surprised at the sway that Alex Cora seems to have in all of this. What's your opinion?
Well, you know, they weren't any worse than they were last year when they finished in last place.
Well, there is that.
Of course, it took a last game of the season win to achieve that. I think that Cora is still there, despite the record over the last couple of years. Shows the kind of maybe the influence that he has on the fear of the Red Sox to get rid of him. because he hasn't done a bad job with what he's had to work with. At the same time, you know, the management and, you know, Tim Bloom, I was never a big fan when they brought him in, and just the moves that he made, the people that he brought in, you were like, really? It's like, you know, where are the bling people? Where are the stars that he should be bringing in? The talent level that he should be bringing in. It's nice to rely on your farm system, but your farm system has to, you know, really be overproducing, and they really got to be ready to step up. And we really haven't seen anybody come up from the farm system and step in and dazzle anybody this particular season. There were no answers coming out of the farm system, either from the pitching standpoint or a hitting standpoint. They still make too many mental errors, you know, too many field and physical errors, and it was a quantity of errors at times. And you think, these guys are making millions of dollars to play like this, and it's absolutely disturbing, and it leads one to someone like me, you know, who's sad to say an old timer now. I don't want to watch that level of baseball. I'd rather go watch high school players and American Legion kids and college kids play.
Well, see, this is where I think Cora gets off a little easy, Tim, because at that level you've got pretty elite athletes, even if they're just triple-A players, and I use the word just lightly. They're talented, and this team was not ready to play. I mean, they weren't prepared. They don't know how to run bases. For God's sakes, they can't run bases. They can't field. And you don't get to that level, Tim. You don't get to triple-A if you can't do that stuff. So I'm wondering, of course, you know, if he should take some of this some blame. He's getting off a little too easy, because everybody knows his baseball acumen and that he really communicates with players. But this team wasn't ready to play.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. You know, they always use, well, we don't have any time to really practice or anything because we're playing, you know, four or five days in a row, and then we're traveling, and then we're playing again, and then we're traveling, and there's no real downtime. Well, you know, not for anything, but the mistakes that they made are little league level.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, I had great teachers when I played little league. I had a great mentor from the baseball clinic I went to for 15 years, Franny Gill. I always mention him, but he taught us how to play the game. And, you know, he always told us, give me 9 guys, I don't care how good they are, who know how to play the game, and I'll beat 10 guys who think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the Red Sox is they think they do, and, you know, it's just classic little league mistakes, or it's, oh, well, that's a rookie mistake. No. You get to the minor leagues, you know, you're not a rookie ball player anymore. You've played through, you know, Little League, Babe Ruth, high school, American Legion, college, and you've learned the fundamentals of the game. You've worked the fundamentals of the game. And you suddenly get to the pros, and now you're making rookie mistakes? No, to me, it's always been a bunch of bullcrap.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, again,
focus.
Yep.
You know, it's a lack of attention. It's not thinking ahead. We were always taught by Franny Gill, you've got to know what you're going to do if the balls hit you, and know what you're going to do if the balls hit to everybody else on the field. And that's all going to be thought out before the pitch. Each pitch is thrown, because each pitch, it changes depending upon where men are on base, how many outs there are. And you've just got to be aware, because if you've got to react after the ball is hit, the play is over and you've lost the game. And I know I've said this countless times before, but it's still true. And these guys don't think. You know, they don't think.
Or they overthink, whatever. I had...
They overthink, Rick, because they're not thinking about what it is they have to do.
Well, you shouldn't have to think. At that level, they should be able to react.
It's simply, it's react.
Yeah.
If you're not reacting, it's all over.
Well, and they should have a... Yeah, and as you say, I mean, we've talked about it before, about being ready on defense especially. You know what your pitcher is throwing, and you have a pretty good idea of how the batter is hitting, and you got a pretty good indication where the ball is going to go before it's even hit if you're on your toes. And I just want to mention this one more time. I played Little League in Germany. My dad was in the Army, so we were an American Army base. And they had, the base had a team, a baseball team that was semi-pro. And one of the players on the team was a catcher named Roseborough. And it was John Roseborough's brother, Jim Roseborough. And he was one of our Little League coaches, Tim. And I'm telling you, we were just in awe. And he was such a nice man. It was great learning from him. And then we had another guy who played in the Black Leagues. His name was Evans, Darrell Evans, and same thing. He had the biggest hands, and he was teaching us how to pitch and how to field and everything. I remember those so fondly, and how much those guys gave to the kids in just fundamentals. And I think we were 11 or 12 years old, so I really look back fondly on that.
You know, and it's just knowing what's going to happen. When I was coaching the freshman in JV at Gloucester, you know. I call a lot of the pitchers, and I would move my outfielders around and bring them in here, move them back over there, and the ball would go right to them. And they come in and go, "Coach, how did you know?" And I go, "Only thing he could do was the pitch. If the pitch was thrown correctly, it's the only thing he would do with it."
Yeah.
I was always amazed. How do you know that? Because I was thinking ahead of the pitch. And that's all you have to do is think ahead of the pitch of what's going to happen.
So who should we be watching for in the playoffs? Because I guess the Orioles finished on top, but I'm a Red Sox fan, and I don't really look at other stuff. So I know the Orioles are probably a favorite. Who else should we look as maybe playing good ball?
Oh God, in the American League, I've always been, and I admit to it, I've always been a Baltimore fan. Even when I was a kid, I was always the Baltimore fan. Never a Yankee fan. Never a Yankee.
And speaking of that, Tim, we neglected to mention another loss in the baseball world, and that's Brooks Robinson.
Yes, you're right.
Speaking of the Orioles, I was a Brooks Robinson fan. Who wasn't a Brooks Robinson fan? And I remember the other player I really enjoyed, I loved watching on that team, was Jim Palmer. And Jim Gentile, he used to hit those grand slams to, like, oh my God, they were hit a mile. But my favorite was Jim Palmer and Brooks Robinson. They were fun to watch.
You know, I can still remember rushing home from school in the 60s from elementary school to get home for 4 o'clock.
Hmm.
Because the World Series was on,
mm-hmm.
You had Palmer going up against either Drysdale or Sandy Koufax, and that was just great baseball. Oh my!
Yep.
So let's see, who else am I going to look for? Well, the Astros are always tough.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not cheating, they're really tough. Rangers had a surprising year. Tigers, I don't think so. Losing record.
Hmm.
But I'm thinking Tampa Bay is always tough. Playoff time comes around.
So I want to ask you about Tampa Bay, because didn't Chaim Bloom have one really good year doing what the Red Sox wanted him to do, to cut payroll, to work with minor leaguers, you know, at the major league level, and they produced. Didn't he have a really good year once?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he came from Tampa.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so he...
It all depends on what the management is willing to spend in order to get the players that you need to fill in the spots. You know, and the Fenway Sports Group, I don't know if they've spread themselves too thin in terms of cash availability to fund the Red Sox, because, you know, they own Liverpool, and they got a couple of other big business ventures, and, you know, has it come at a cost to the Red Sox? That's what a lot, you know, that's what some people need to look at. But, you know, the Twins finished up strong at the end of the season, and there's a lot of community, a lot of people liking what they do, because they're that quiet team up from up north that have in the past surprised people.
Mm-hmm. All right, well,
I've always been an old fan. I'm glad they're back where they used to be. Too bad the Red Sox aren't challenging them. But it's just a great baseball town, a great baseball tradition. The teams from the 60s and the 70s are outstanding. They were always big. And even as a Boston kid, I still knew their whole lineup. It was unbelievable. You can name their whole lineup. That's how popular a team they were.
Yeah, that's when I collected baseball cards. So, yeah. All right, Tim, we're going to take a break. I'm going to go back to our interview. I talked with Bishop Fenwick High School football coach Dave Woods this afternoon. The Crusaders are at 4-0. They're going to be playing a team that is also 4-0 coming up on Friday. That's Cardinal Spelman. And then after that, we'll check in with Mike Grenier. So please stay with us. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back with Dave Woods. So, again, this is MSONewsSports.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore, a real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. Back now with Bishop Fenwick High School football coach Dave Woods. And coach, I'm just talking here before we started recording. You guys are scoring some points.
Yeah, again, I've been kind of clicking on all cylinders on offense. Even kind of when plays break down, something good seems to happen too. So it's fun to watch.
Do you have one in mind where something broke down and it worked out? How's that happen?
There was probably three or four Friday nights.
Oh my goodness.
We had a play, we kind of went full vertical and St. Mary's covered it very well, and Braden just kind of rolled out and threw the ball into a crowd of players, and Luke Connolly came down with it and scored a touchdown. So, and then another play we had with Jesse, we were trying to hit Jesse just kind of on a slant, and we had some pressure, and he had a roll out and ended throwing the ball 50 yards, and Jesse got behind everybody, and that worked for a touchdown too. So there's been a few of them that seem to work out in our favor. Again, as defensive coordinator, it's frustrating when you do everything right, you cover everything, and all of a sudden the quarterback rolls and rolls and extends the play and then hits somebody for a touchdown.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, we've been lucky to have a few of those.
Excellent, excellent. Tell me a little bit more about Luke Connolly's game.
I might be one of the best two-way games we've seen here in a long, long time. We just finished doing all the stats yesterday, and Luke had 19 tackles on defense, which was incredible. He rushed for 173 yards, had two catches, one for a touchdown, had four touchdowns overall.
Mm.
He just he did everything, and there wasn't anything he didn't do on Friday night. And he did it as well as anybody's done it here in a long time. I kind of compared him to Nick Bonner a little, the way he played. I mean, he was everywhere on both sides of the ball.
Your offense, you had a lot of passing yardage too, so which one opens up for the other?
So again, a lot of our passing yards on Friday were broken plays where we just rolled out and ended up throwing a deep ball that we came down with.
Mm-hmm.
But we've definitely we leaned a little, we were a little heavy run early. You know, the first couple of games that Braden was in as our quarterback, we were a little more heavy run. And that's always a good thing when you have Anthony Nichols and Luke Connolly, that you can lean on them, and the offensive line has been outstanding. So, but the last couple of weeks, just the game plans have opened up the passing game a little bit more, and Friday night, again, we had a little bit more in the passing game, going in as a game plan, and as it turned out, we threw the ball probably 18, 20 times, a little bit more than we have in the other games.
St. Mary's, I mean, they're one of your rivals, you know, just down the road from you, and we all know Coach Driscoll. It has to be a particularly good feeling when you beat a team like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime we play St. Mary's in anything, any sport, doesn't matter what it is, mm-hmm. it's always a great, they're a great, you know, rival for us, and whether it's football or girls soccer, whatever it is, it always brings out the best in both teams, and they came Friday night ready to play for sure. They had their A game, and again, we were down 8-0 after the first quarter, and then we kind of got things rolling a little bit, but it's always good to beat your rival and to get a good league win, so yeah, that always feels good.
All right, before we get to this week's game, brag about one of your linemen, Coach.
John Kennedy is a kid. He's our only senior lineman. Everybody else, they're all underclassmen. And John has really, kind of solidified that group. He's been the leader of that group all year. And John has just got a great, great attitude. And he works out every day and he's never satisfied. And he pulls all those other guys along, to, you know, to have that same attitude. Don't be satisfied. Get better every day. Get better every play. And that's kind of the tone that John has set for us right from the first day of practice. So John has been phenomenal.
Okay, game coming up this week with Cardinal Spelman. Is this an away or home? It's an away game.
An away game, yeah.
All right.
They play Friday, yeah.
And that's quite a drive down there and to Brockton, and they're 4-0. You are 4-0. You guys are racking them up at a high percentage in terms of points, and so are they. So what are you looking at this week?
So they're a team that's, again, they have a lot of momentum right now, and they're on a roll. They're playing with a lot of confidence. They're playing with a little bit of swagger. So we're expecting to go down there and have a battle. I mean, they just know how to win. You know, they went through some struggles in the middle of the season last year, and since they've turned it around since then, I mean, they've only lost, I think, one game. They lost in the state semifinal to Stoneham, and they had Stoneham on the ropes in the fourth quarter. So it was they've just really learned how to win, and they're group of winners, and again, they're playing with a lot of confidence right now, and going to be home at their place on a Friday night. I'm sure their crowd is going to be fired up, so we're really looking forward to a great atmosphere down there.
Does the student body support a long drive like that down to Brockton? You get many kids go, or many parents?
Yeah, we usually have a pretty good crowd down there. For a long time, you know, the Spelman game was a huge game for us. The winner of it kind of, you know, was going to be in the driver's seat for the league title for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used to have busloads of guys, kids that would go down there. I'm not sure that would be the case Friday night, but I'm sure we will still get a good turnout down there. Again, 2-4-0 teams, so it's going to be a big tilt in the league for sure. So I'm sure we'll get support from our student body. They were great Friday night. Both teams, St. Mary's and Fenwick, had huge crowds, and both fan groups were awesome. It was like a playoff atmosphere. It was a lot of fun.
I love it when that happens. Coach, good things for you guys. Congratulations, and good luck this week.
Awesome. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rick. Dave. Take care. Sure. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That's Dave Woods, who is the Bishop Fenwick High School football coach with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. And we are back live now. Thanks to Coach Woods for talking with us this afternoon. Appreciate that. On the line now, it's been a while since we've talked with Mike Grenier for various reasons. Sports journalist, our resident basketball insider, of course, all things NBA and especially Celtics, but knowledgeable in so many other areas as well. Michael, welcome back. How you doing?
Oh, that's good. That's quite a compliment, Rick, so I hope I can live up to that. And say hello to Tim, too. We've all missed each other for the past 3 or 4 weeks.
We have. Mike, you may as well hang up now, because it's not going to get any better for you.
Rick, I know we want to talk a little hoops, especially you know, Drew Holiday coming to the Celtics, a huge move. But has anybody talked about Tim Wakefield tonight?
Yeah, we have. But please feel free to comment on it. We're both saddened.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Astounded.
Great person, and yeah. You know, here's the thing. First of all, to get a gripe out of the way, and I don't know if you've mentioned Curt Schilling at all, but for Curt Schilling, that was such a disreputable thing he did in terms of the Wakefield family, revealing 3 days before Tim Wakefield died on his podcast that Tim Wakefield was seriously, gravely ill, was so dishonorable and disreputable. I don't know if that's the sentiment you guys have, but I just found it so offensive.
Oh, I definitely feel the same way, you know, and the Red Sox are very classy in slamming him in the indirect fashion in which they did it.
Yeah.
You know, in stating that no one had permission to divulge that information, and
right,
everybody knew who they were talking about.
Exactly. And you know, a lot of the media guys that I used to go to Red Sox games with were the same ones that came out on Twitter and really slammed Curt Schilling, much deserved. And that's all we need to say about that. But I just wanted to add my 1.5 cents worth on that. It was just, Wakefield was too, he had too much class to be put through that, his family and all that stuff. So God rest his soul now, you know.
I was telling Tim, my older daughter Mindy has met Tim Wakefield a couple of times, and she got to have a nice little audience with him before a Red Sox game a few years ago. And she came just beaming about what a nice man he is.
Well, it's funny, too. It's just funny you should mention that, Rick and Tim, because my younger brother, who lives in Melbourne, Florida for many years, and that's where Tim Wakefield, that's where his home was in the off season. And Melbourne, Florida, the growing community in Melbourne when Tim Wakefield was there. And my brother ran into him just on general, bit like in the bank. He would run into him at Sears, Roebuck, and they would just be looking in the same section of the store. And they struck up a conversation and talked for a good 15 minutes. And like my brother told me recently, it was like the next door neighbor that you've known for years, you know, and they're shopping for the same tools, you know, at Ace Hardware. So that's the kind of person he was, down to earth. And, you know, like I said, my brother had interactions with him and had nothing but great things to say about him.
Well, you either have that or you don't, and obviously he did. And it's a very sad day for Boston sports.
Yes, it was, yeah.
All right, let me ask the general question about what the hell is going on in the NBA with these trades.
Oh, my goodness. It's like these teams are trying to outdo each other to have the best possible roster to win a championship. And when the Bucks acquired Damian Lillard just a few days ago, all of a sudden the attention turned to the Bucks as having the best roster in the NBA. Even though the Denver Nuggets are the defending champions, everyone's sort of forgetting about them.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bucks suddenly have the roster to beat because they acquired Damian Lillard, who was a big-time scorer who's been around 11, 12, 13 years. And then the Celtics stole that thunder by getting Jrue Holiday, who helped the Bucks to win the championship 3 years ago. So now it's the Celtics, some people are saying, have the best roster in the NBA, and yet no one's talking about the Denver Nuggets. But it's I want to get your take on this, and Rick too, but I think it's a fabulous acquisition, Jrue Holiday, for many reasons, foremost being his experience. He's 33 years old, yet he's been durable. He plays 65, 67, 68 games per season. He had his second highest scoring average of his entire 14-year career last season, 19.3. Since he was with the Bucks for 3 years, he had his highest shooting percentages the last 3 years overall, even though he's edging along at age 30, 31, 32. He shot like 50% from the floor. That's very good for a point guard, and like almost 40% on threes. And not only that, he's a five-time all-defensive player NBA. So he's an extremely good, solid, strong defender, and he will replace Marcus Smart. And it's not really like degrading Marcus Smart to say this, but this guy can play defense. He's also a much better offensive player than Marcus Smart. And the biggest part of this deal, and this is where I wanted to hear your comment, Tim, is that he's a true point guard. He can get the ball over half court in 4 or 5 seconds after a made basket or after a defensive rebound. You do not need Jason Tatum to take the ball out of bounds and spend 8 or 9 seconds going over half court and then setting up a half court offense, which slows everything down. If Joe Mazzulla allows that, he should fine. He should fine Jason Tatum $100 every time he brings the ball over half court. Because now you have Jrue Holiday, a true point guard, and he could do that, bring the ball over half court in 4 or 5 seconds or 3 or 4 seconds as opposed to 8 or 9 seconds. And that makes a vast difference in the offense.
You know, we talked about Tatum's need for the ball in his hands and the detrimental effect we all thought that it had on the Celtics' overall flow of the game. My biggest fear about all that is the fact that he is 33. He has played a lot. In the last couple of years, we can look at how he's played and said, you know, he's a guy who has matured into his game. He's rounded out his game, as they like to say. He's taking better shots. He's just not coming up and heaving the ball. He's getting himself in better situations to score. And that's one of the things that the Celtics need. They need someone with a good head on their shoulders and isn't running pell-mell up and down the court, you know, trying to make something happen when there's nothing there, but who can assess the situation, find the open man, get the ball to him, and hit the open shot when it's given to him. So he certainly balances that out. I just hope he manages to stay on that track of staying right, healthy and playing a lot of games throughout the season.
Well, like I said, Tim, I know the age is a concern. He's 33. However, the last two seasons, 67 games, 67 games. And when you look at the guy they had to get rid of, you know, I'm talking about Robert Williams. We always loved his potential, but he's been now 5 years of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And his five seasons, he's only played 199 games. That's 40, that's less than 40, about 40 games per season to round it off. That's less than half the schedule, the 82-game schedule.
Yep.
So we know what he can do defensively. He still doesn't have much of an offensive game, Robert Williams. He's a great defender. He hustles. He's a team guy. However, he has been still has a lot of untapped potential, and it remains potential because he's never been healthy. He's never been healthy in his five-year career.
Yeah. I mean, he was such a joy to watch. I mean, he was so exuberant, especially on defense and clearing the boards. To him, that was his ultimate challenge, was getting the ball. And seeing him go up with those long arms, that made watching the Celtics fun when he was in there. It's just not on the floor enough to make it a whole lot of fun.
Yep.
But
yep.
Again, what Holiday brings is the pedigree. Can this added pedigree that they've now put on the court,
yep,
is this enough to get them back to the final and, you know, hang in the trophy?
Well, let's face it, guys, right? They've come close the last 2 years, meaning, you know, they went to 7 games with the Miami Heat last year. They could have made the finals. They had a superior roster, superior team than Miami. But Spoelstra was the difference. Actually, a 7-game series proved to be the difference. Much better coach than Mazzulla. The previous year, the Celtics go to 6 games in the finals against Golden State. So I guess Brad Stevens must feel they needed another piece of the puzzle to change the picture a little bit, to give them a better shot at winning it all. And I give Stevens credit for taking a chance. He acquired Porzingis, a proven scorer, a 7'3" guy, and now he's got Jrue Holiday. Yes, they had to part with some terrific players, Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, Brogdon, who, by the way, we love Brogdon, sixth man of the year and all that, but he was going to be an impending problem because he's not happy. He wanted a new contract. He wanted a long-time extension. And he just wasn't going to get it here, it was going to come too late. So you have the potential of him being maybe not a malcontent, but, you know, just a little bit upset about his contract situation. And you really don't want that distraction.
Well,
even though it's still open to win a championship.
It was also, I've been reading about he wasn't happy with the way the medical situation was handled.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's important to a guy's.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Because the money these guys make today, you want to make sure the diagnosis is always, you know, is 100% correct or as close to 100% correct.
So as much as I'm going to miss, I love Malcolm Brogdon and Rob
me
Williams too.
Too,
but I think in terms of the hard, you know, the harsh reality of winning basketball, this looks like a good move. Today was media day and everybody on the Celtics was effusive in their praise of Holiday.
Right.
One question I got to ask you, I've read stories about Holiday, and I see his height given as 6'5", and 6'3". Do you know which one it is?
6'4".
Okay.
I'm going to pick the middle one, right, Tim? That's what you do when you have that kind of question. Yeah,
on,
when you have a puzzle like that, you pick you pick the middle and hope that he's somewhere in there. But I can tell you, in terms of Jrue Holiday and Damian Lillard, haven't spoken to Pat Connaughton of the Milwaukee Bucks about both, because Connaughton played his first three seasons in the NBA with Damian Lillard in Portland, and I know how much he loved and respected Damian Lillard's game back then. And, of course, Connaughton spent three seasons with Jrue Holiday in the Bucks the last 3 years. So, therefore, and I know Pat has spoken to me, you know, on several occasions about how great a teammate that Holiday is. So to hear that, let's say, in a one-on-one conversation, that Jrue Holiday is a great teammate, that says a lot for Holiday's presence with the Boston Celtics and what they need. I mean, obviously Brogdon was a great teammate, Robert Williams was a great teammate, but when you have a big piece of the puzzle coming in like Jrue Holiday, and you know that his reputation is about winning, and the first year that he was with the Bucks, by the way, they won the whole thing. So therefore, he is a difference maker, and he can really have a tremendous impact, and I believe he will have a huge impact on everything they do offensively and defensively this season.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. It will be interesting to see the interaction now. The thing is hopefully is going to be a low post player. You know, don't go outside. We got enough outside players. We need somebody 7'3" to be underneath the basket, to grab rebounds, to get the Phil Esposito kind of goals. You know, somebody shoots it, ball pops in your hands, you put it back in. You know, Phil made a living out of doing that. That's all he has to do is be big around the net, get the rebound, and put them back in, and then shoot foul shots. You know, but it'll be interesting to see the interaction between the other three, how they can move the ball around, share the ball, you get their shots as they want to do, and not be upset if you know, play more like the big three played in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, we don't care who scores as long as we win.
Yeah, well, I think Jrue Holiday brings that to the table, Tim. He's a very unselfish, a true point guard, like I said, who can move the ball and get the team into a fast break mode, but when he needs to, he hits some of the craziest threes and twos because he's a very talented offensive player, but I love the fact that he's a five-time all-defensive player in the NBA. He has a very good defensive reputation. He gets in your, he's very strong physically, and he'll get in your face, he'll get into your body as a defensive player, and he's a disruptive defensive player. So I think of him as an excellent two-way player, not just a good point guard, but a very well-rounded two-way player who obviously has tremendous experience. He played 1 year at UCLA. Then, you know, he was with the Pelicans for 8 years. He was with Philadelphia for 4 years, Bucks for 3 years. So he's got a ton of experience at a high level, has gone to the playoffs, has made all-star teams. Nothing's going to faze him. You could throw him into a sixth game of the NBA Finals tomorrow night, and he'd know what to do. You know, he's just that kind of player that you love to have, a veteran presence on a team that's sort of recalibrated now and is made of championship timber. And let's see if the Celtics can get over the hump now, Tim and Rick, because we know how great the Celtics' history is. However, when I hear people say they're all about the championship banners, I say to myself, God, I've seen, they haven't had a championship banner since 2008.
Right.
And they've only had one since 1986, and that was in 2008. So they're kind of in that mix of really good teams that have a shot at winning it. But I don't think of them as constant contenders because basically they've had some down years, even with good teams. And I felt the last 2 years were kind of missed opportunities. The year that they lost to Golden State in six, and last year when they had a superior team to the Miami, it still galls me that they lost to the Miami Heat last season.
But they've been competitive, and they've been through some stuff with coaches and stuff, and they're a hot ticket. I mean, you don't mind. Well, I don't know if you'd mind paying the price, but at least you know you're going to get a good product out there.
No question.
They haven't won banners, but they've really been competitive and fun to watch. And now, Mike, the season opens up 3 weeks from Wednesday. What about the bench?
That's going to be the huge question for the Celtics now, right? Because Grant Williams is gone, And, you know, Robert Williams would start occasionally, but you have those, you know, what's Horford going to do? I mean, what's Sam Hauser going to do? Some of the offseason acquisitions that Brad Stevens made, we don't know too much about them. They haven't had much experience at a high level. They played with the Pacers and other teams that have not been in the mix. So I think that's the massive question mark, is going to be the bench. So, you know, we have to see how that plays out. I really, because we haven't seen these players in action, they don't have too much experience, we don't know how they're going to react. And, of course, we want Joe Mazzulla to use that bench because Al Horford is 37 years old. And, you know, you do want Jrue Holiday to get a little bit of rest, even though he's been proven to be durable. And we know Tatum and Brown are going to play a lot of minutes. They're in the prime of their careers. But you still want to see Tatum and Brown play not 39 or 40 minutes, but more like 34 or 35 or 33, somewhere in there. So the bench is actually going to be critically important. I mean, you got Peyton Pritchard, who I think will get a lot more minutes this year. I think he shows a lot when he gets more minutes. I think he's a very solid three-point shooter. Even though he's a small defender, he's a pretty decent defender for his size. He plays smart. He's not out of position. He gets beaten only because he's not physically big, so people pound away at him inside. But he's going to have to come in off the bench and do a good job. I think Hauser is a terrific three-point shooter. I think he needs extended minutes, and I think Mazzulla did not trust him last season. But I truly believe he could be a very effective three-point guy off the bench and give the team a boost with like 9 quick points or 12 quick points. And he's not a horrible defender, but if you're on the bench in the NBA, you're not considered usually a great defender. So, I mean, Hauser fits into that category of, okay, he can spark you on offense, and he can play decent defense. You just don't expect him to play great defense. So I think those are two key guys off the bench. And then you're going to need more from these new acquisitions, you know?
You left out Derek White.
Well, Derek White. I mean, Derek White's the key. He could start. He's going to be, maybe he becomes the sixth man of the year this year. Tremendous player. Had a great year last year. Could easily start for this team, or for the Bucks, for that matter. I mean, he's a quality player. So, you know, thanks for reminding me of him. I was already counting on him being a big factor. And, you know, I think they have a nice balance of younger guys and older guys, Holiday and Al Horford being the older guys, and, of course, Brown and Tatum being in the prime of their careers. You know, so I think they have a really good mix. And the question mark again is, can Mazzulla improve his coaching now that he's had a full year under his belt? And I've been hard on Mazzulla. I admit that. I thought he could have coached much better in the playoffs last year. But we do have to remember, they didn't take over the team until like 24 hours or something before the season began. Mm. And that was a real mess last year with the way they had to get rid of Ime Udoka at the last second. So hopefully Mazzulla has learn from his mistakes. I'm sure that Brad Stevens has gotten his attention in the offseason and talked to him about many, many things. I just hope Mazzulla can follow through on some of the things he learned a year ago.
Well said, Mike. they're a team with a lot of answers.
Yeah.
A team with a lot of questions.
Yep.
How they manage to answer those questions with the answers that they possess in terms of personnel, that's definitely going to dictate how that season's going to go. And,
yeah.
And of course, get off on the right foot. Get off on a nice run of wins to give yourself some momentum right away and get going, you know, because that usually makes an entire season.
No doubt, Tim. And I think everyone's going to be looking forward to the Eastern Conference race because I think everyone figures the Celtics and the Bucks will be chasing each other all season. I think that will be the case as long as, let's say, assuming both teams stay relatively healthy. I think you're going to see the Celtics and the Bucks right up there with perhaps an identical, or their records are going to be close to each other, I believe, because both teams are hungry for a championship. Both teams are quality teams. A lot of quality of players, a lot of pride on both teams. I just think it's going to be a heck of a race in the Eastern Conference. And of course, home court advantage could be a massive factor with those two teams when it comes down to the Eastern Conference final. I'm not assuming the Miami Heat could sneak up there. Or who knows who else? Philadelphia still has, you know, Embiid, of course. But, of course, they have a dissatisfied James Harden. I don't think they're as much of a factor as they were a year ago. But certainly Miami with Spoelstra in there and Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero coming back. Of course, they thought they were going to get Damian Lillard. They didn't get him, so they're disappointed. But Spoelstra will make the best. He's just a terrific coach. He'll have them in the race. I don't know if they'll be the quality team that the Milwaukee Bucks and the Celtics appear to be on paper, but they're going to be strong. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm excited about the season getting going.
Let me ask you one question about Missoula's coaching. What do you think the effect of Sam Castle will be?
I think that was a great offseason moves by Brad Stevens to acquire Sam Cassell and also other experienced coaches on that bench. I'm sure that Brad Stevens bent Missoula's ear a little bit in the offseason. Said, you know what? You have to pay attention to these guys. They have a lot more NBA coaching experience than you do, Joe. And you really have to take their advice and suggestions to heart and make those changes on the floor or manifest those suggestions on the floor at times. And Missoula will have the final word. He's the head coach, obviously. But I think he's got stronger backing this season with those experienced guys on the bench as coaches. So I just think that will be an improved situation, at least potentially, Rick, a major improvement it could be with Sam Cassell and other guys on the bench.
Tim, final thought?
I like Cassell coming on, and as Mike said, you know, he brings the "I've been there before"
yes
attitude and the knowledge, and not getting lost in the moment is going to be key to the Celtics this year. Too many times you can end up like a deer in the headlights, look about yourself and reaction. There's a guy who's been there, done that. And again, having that kind of experience whispering in your ear, tugging at your elbow and giving you some words of advice, that's only going to help Missoula become a better coach.
I agree. And the other thing we have to remember, Tim, on the flip side, the Milwaukee Bucks, who had an experienced coach in Mike Budenholzer, and because they didn't win it all, they let him go. They fired him, and they have Adrian Griffin, a new guy, who really hasn't been a head coach before. He's been a long-time assistant coach. And we don't know if that's going to be an improvement or a subtraction for the Milwaukee Bucks. So, therefore, when you look at it, Missoula going into this season has a bit more head coaching experience than the new guy, the Milwaukee Bucks. We don't know what kind of chemistry he will create with the Milwaukee Bucks. But they have a veteran team, of course. Giannis has been around. Obviously, Damian Lillard has been around. Chris Middleton. They have a lot of veteran talent on that team.
Good stuff, Mike. Keep it coming, man. We'll talk to you next week. It's another week closer to the season.
And who knows how many other players will be acquired in the next 7 days.
No. Good heavens. Mike, thank you so much, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, Tim. You guys have a great week.
Talk to you later. You too, Mike.
Bye.
All right. That's Mike Grenier, sports journalist. Knows everything about the Celtics and other stuff as well. Tim, any final thoughts here? We've said goodnight to Red Sox baseball. We might be saying goodnight to Patriots football, but we got winter sports coming up.
Well, you know, like we said, it's been a tough weekend for Boston sports and for fans of baseball. You know, losing Tim Wakefield, Russ Francis, and probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, third baseman in the history of baseball, Brooks Robinson, all in one weekend. We seldom see a series of losses like that in the sports world. And it just shows us how fragile life is, how you don't know when your time is up or in what fashion it's going to end up. So you need to live every day to the fullest and to make as much a mark on life and for those around you as you possibly can.
Yeah, some wise person said we all come with expiration dates.
Yep.
Okay, Coach, I appreciate it. It was a fun night. Wish we had gotten Coach Ryan Nolan on, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. He's a busy guy, as all these high school coaches are. Hope to have him later on in the week. My thanks to Dave Woods, of course, Bishop Fenwick, and we've got a lot of stuff coming up. The Salem News Sports Writers will be dropping tomorrow with Bill Newell, of course, hosting the program with Salem News sports editor Phil Stacey, the assistant sports editor Matt Williams, and Nick Giannino. That's all coming up tomorrow on North Shore, MSO News Sports, I should say. So that'll take care of it, Tim. Have a nice week and be well.
Thank you, Rick. You also, and hello to the family.
All right, same, Matt, right back at you. Thank you, Coach. Take care.
All right, buddy.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is our Goodwill Ambassador and our sports analyst here at MSO News Sports. And Tim and I have been doing this since 2005. My goodness gracious. Anyway, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. And don't forget our super, really cool North Shore Today magazine daily here on MSO. It drops between 8 and 9, generally speaking. Bill Newell is the editor for that. Does a fantastic job with that. It has we have a newscast in there, a sportscast in there, plus community news notes from all over the North Shore, and that's daily right here on MSO News Sports. So on behalf of Bill Newell, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin, and of course, Tim Kearns, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant, great week. Be well and do the right thing.